Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, June 4th. I'm Ray Graff. The bird experts are back today. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. They're here to answer your questions about birds and share your observations with you. The number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us as well, voxpop@wamc.org. That's the email, and the number is 800-348-2551. It's always fun to have these two in the studio. It's fun to talk birds with you, Rich Guthrie, Julie Hart, and your questions coming up after the news. Oh, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Tuesday. It's the 4th, right? Yeah, that's it. Birds today, right? Rich Guthrie is, what are you doing? He's plugging things. Rich, why didn't you do that before the show started? Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart are here to answer your questions about birds. Will you stop it, Rich? If you have a question, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You're like a roadie for Leonard Skinner. Stop. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. We have several emails already. You know,
it's going to be a fun show.
We've been sitting here for 6 minutes. You had time. Okay. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart, welcome.
Hi.
You know what happened, Julie? Rich was so enthralled with the previous program,
oh, yes,
which was quite salacious,
right,
about deep sea species having carnal relations, that now he doesn't know what to do. All right, well, welcome back. We're going to talk about birds today, and we'll try to keep it clean if we can. Julie Hart, the Breeding Bird Atlas, is rocking and rolling, yeah?
Yeah, so lots of breeding activity.
Well, there you go.
Off to a start.
Just give us the PG version and it'll be fine. No, but it's, yeah, this is busy time.
No, it's super busy. And, you know, like just my feeders here in the Albany area, like full of baby birds coming in and being fed by their parents. So right now it was prime time for the Atlas. It's the final year of this Atlas, and we need all the help we can get.
How do people do that?
Right, so you'll submit your observations using the eBird mobile app and send them into the New York Breeding Bird Atlas. And you can find out more on our website, which is ebird.org/atlasny.
And we will mention this several times during,
yes,
the show. So if you didn't catch that, we will definitely talk about that more often. Rich, do you have all your technical issues taken care of now?
Let's hope so, Ray.
Can you hear yourself and everybody else?
Yeah, I hear this echo. It's in my head.
Oh, that's nice. So what's happening with you?
Things is good. Summertime, summertime, summertime coming on. And I agree with Julie. Now's the time. This is when they're out there. They're most active. A lot of the babies are out of the nest. Mom and pop are busy gathering up food, bringing it instant, right away, confirmed nesting. That's what we need.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you guys questions about screech owls. Did we talk about this last month? No, we didn't.
Talked about the screech owls, but I don't know if we asked this question.
Well, the screech, yeah, owls in my backyard?
Mm-hmm.
Did we talk about that?
Maybe.
Okay.
Do it again. Tell us again.
Yeah, okay. We did a little whistle on that.
Yeah.
I remember,
oh,
now,
that's right. We did, yes, talk about that. But they're out in the daytime, too. Is that normal? They make racket all the time.
When they have young, yeah.
Yeah.
The younger.
They don't know how to behave themselves.
Yeah. They're hungry.
They're so loud. All right. Well, we have a stack of emails here, so we might as well get going. This one is from Phil. We had eastern bluebirds at our feeder all winter for the first time. Is this unusual and maybe due to mild weather?
It's not unusual. It's very fortunate. You're one of the actually few lucky ones. And bluebirds do hang around through the winter, but usually they go back into the woods in search of a sheltered spot where there's plenty of berries to sustain themselves. But if you got the right feeder combination going on out there, well, lucky you. And one of the favorite foods through the winter are dried mealworms.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. This is from Sherry. Morning doves had a nest on my back porch. They're such lovely birds. It was a beautiful nest with two eggs in it. Then grackles came, absolutely destroyed the nest. Mm-hmm. I didn't know they did that. And I'd never seen an in my yard before. Now they're around all the time. They love the bird bath. I'm not so crazy about them, though. Learned something new anyway. Grackles are smart and mean. You agree, Julie?
Yes, they are known nest predators. Yeah, there's a, you know, we often think of like small mammals as being nest predators, but there's a lot of birds that also do that. So blue jays, some of the wrens, crows, grackles, they all will
and
destroy.
The balancing act is when you see a crow flying off with a grackle in its beak.
Yeah, right.
They, you know,
yeah.
They're just big guys picking on the smaller guys.
This one is from Jackie in Easton, New York. I woke up the other night slash morning, 12:30 a.m., and having my windows open, heard a bird singing. I confirmed it was a Carolina wren using the Merlin app. Short time later, other birds started singing. Same thing happened at 1:30 a.m. the following night. My Merlin app recorded 13 species of birds. At the time, I presumed the birds just spontaneously began singing and joined in. I believed the bird songs were coming from different locations in the nearby wooded area. However, one of the birds was ID'd as a northern mockingbird. I knew the mockingbird is an amazing mimic of bird and man-made sounds, but could a northern mockingbird fool the Merlin app with multiple species multiple times in approximately an hour of listening?
A combination of all of the above.
Mm.
Yes, Merlin, mockingbirds can trick Merlin. They do a very good rendition of some of bird species, and they're known for singing through the night.
Mm-hmm.
And other birds will wake up and sing through the night as well. I've done that. I left my Merlin on, recording through the dark hours of the night, and got some incredible results.
Mm.
It's kind of a fun thing.
Mm. And I will add that we just got through a full moon period as well. So depending on when she had that observation, then it could have been also a really bright night. And sometimes some of those nocturnal birds are even more active.
Interesting. Well, this one's from Tom in Gardner, Mass. Have any of you been to the Bird Museum of Vermont, where all the birds are hand-carved and very realistic?
Yes.
I have, yes.
Yep.
And, yeah, a lot of these old library museums have incredible collections of historic documentation.
Yeah.
In fact, the one in Granville, New York, has a mounted specimen by, oh, I forget his name right now, but of a black swift that he collected back in 1880-something in Springfield, Massachusetts. Never been recorded in Massachusetts before, and there's one in the Granville, New York Museum.
Okay. That's not the Vermont one that we were talking about.
On the other side of the border, Vermont.
Oh, is that? Oh, really? They're close.
Yeah, they're side by side.
10-4. All right, this is from Carlene. Another thing about Merlin. I have the Merlin app on my phone. The other day, I was admiring a mockingbird. It was doing his job, imitating nearby birds. I turned on the app to see if it would identify the mockingbird. Instead, it identified the birds the mockingbird was mocking, namely a song sparrow and an eastern peewee. Is that correct?
Peewee, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. How does the Merlin app identify mockingbirds? Well, we went through this a little bit. In fact, there are several about just this topic.
Wow.
Well, also, Merlin will pick up nearby birds as well. The mockingbird may well have been singing. It doesn't do a very good job on a song sparrow, so the Merlin probably picked up a legitimate song sparrow as well.
Uh-huh.
Mm.
Okay.
And I'll add that, you know, Merlin is looking at the spectrogram, so it's not actually like... Yeah, it's like reading the spectrogram, and that's how it's identifying birds. It's not actually interpreting the sound that, like, we hear.
That is so cool.
So it depends on how well the mockingbird can imitate, like, even on a spectrogram.
So what is the I don't know if you know this, the frequency receiving range of the phone and or the app? Is it beyond the human audible range?
Certainly, yes. Yeah, it'll pick up things that are inaudible, either by frequency or by volume. It'll hear birds that, well, in my case, it's easy enough for it, but birds that are out of sound range.
Yeah, there are some bird sounds and bat sounds that are too high for our phones, and then you need to have special devices that will pick up those really high frequencies.
But they have them.
But Merlin does a pretty good job for everything that the human ear can hear.
That's pretty cool. All right, this is a different take, and this one's from Norma. Mm. I just downloaded the Merlin app, and I love it. So many birds I was not aware of on my 5 acres bordering a creek. Common yellowthroat, crested flycatcher, willow flycatcher, to name a few. So far, the only inaccuracy was when Merlin identified a wild turkey, and it was really my neighbor's chihuahua barking.
Really happens to me, too. Happens a lot.
But you found it, in general, accurate?
Yes. Yes, but trust but verify. That's my take on it.
That's a good motto.
It was Ronald Reagan's motto, wasn't
it? Yes, it is. Applicable.
This is from Jeffrey. The one eagle I see almost every day on my way to work was recently joined by a second one. I was happy to see two way up top a dead tree. Mm-hmm. That's not really a question, but that's nice to hear
that
from.
That is great.
Jeffrey and Coxsackie. Thank you.
I mean, eagles are really having a heyday right now in New York. They've really taken over and spread their range, and there's so many more than there used to be even just a few years ago. So that's really great to hear.
All right, one more, and then we'll take a break. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart are here. It's birds at 800-348-2551. This one is from both Jerry in Guilderland and Judy in Chicago. Not sure who is the designated email writer, but here we go. I have been following the Cornell live cam. The red-tailed hawk this summer laid 4 eggs. 2 hatched, 2 didn't. The Cornell folks said they hadn't seen that before, didn't know what would happen to the remaining eggs. Isn't this rather common that some eggs may not hatch? Anyway, the 2 eggs are gone. 2 babies are ready to fledge, and that's from Jerry in Guilderland and Judy in Chicago.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, it's common?
Well, it happens.
It happens regularly. Some species more than others.
Do we know why the eggs wouldn't be viable?
There's a number of reasons why they wouldn't be viable. And in some species, you'll have, for example, like terns, they'll lay 4 eggs. And maybe 3 of them will hatch, but they're spaced out in the days that they hatch. And then depending on how much food is available, the strongest ones, so generally the oldest ones, will survive, and the younger ones may not if there's not enough food to feed that young
one. So survival of the fittest, basically.
Yes.
All right, let's take it. Well, go ahead, Rich.
I'm good. That's totally right on. Thanks, Julie.
Number to call here is 800-348-2551. Email voxpop@wamc.org. Birds today. We'll be back. Lovely, lovely music there. Thank you, boys. But the fun drive is Monday, 6 a.m. We've been doing the lockbox. You have done a magnificent job so far. It was another big morning. If you want to make a pledge to the lockbox, you can do it anytime, wamc.org. Tons of premiums and stuff there. Every bit we raise now will shorten the drive, which begins in earnest on Monday at 6 a.m. It's wamc.org. You'll probably hear some more about the lockbox today and tomorrow, so we'll leave it there. It's Birds Today with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart, and let's go to the phone, shall we? We'll go to Martha in Gansevoort. Martha, you're on.
Hi. I had heard comments twice on your program that crows and ravens can't exist together. Well, in 2021, I took some pictures. I put out kibble and corn, and then I also put out a couple of eggs for the ravens. And I've got them pictured together. They'd come. I think they were a family unit of crows, because during the winter, I don't see the ravens. And also, there are a lot more crows, but then I guess they disperse to their nesting areas. So I think I have a family of crows that are accustomed to the raven coming, and he'll grab a little of the kibble or corn, and then he flies off with the egg. And I didn't want the crows to get the egg, so if I remember, I usually put it in the freezer the night before and then put it out. And the ravens definitely fly off with it, and the crows just eat the kibble and corn. So I thought it was interesting. This year I've been putting out eggs for the ravens, too. But I haven't got the pictures that I took in 2021.
Sounds like a win-win.
You can see the difference in size. What?
It sounds like a win-win situation for all three of you.
Yes, they seem to coexist nicely, this particular group.
Nice.
All right. Do we ever mention that they don't? They can't coexist?
Well, yes. So during the breeding season,
twice.
The crows will attack the ravens.
During the breeding season.
During the breeding season. But during the non-breeding season, yeah, they're fine together.
All right. Martha, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. And you, let's go to Fred and Wine and Skill. Fred, you're on.
Hi. This has to do with Baltimore Orioles for probably the last 4 years anyways. I have feeders up for them, oranges and the grape jelly. And they come in pretty much early May and sometimes are pretty regular till like right around now, first week of June. And I've seen this year, I saw two males, one female. And it seems like that's too long a time for them to be just passing through. So I was wondering, do they get to a certain point in their nesting where they don't come in to the feeders and they're doing some other kind of behavior?
Exactly. Yeah, I have that same phenomenon happen, same timeline in my yard as well. Once they start to get really busy taking care of the young, they tend not to be in at the feeders as much, in my experience.
Not only the orioles, but some of the other bird species, like the grosbeaks and the buntings, they'll retreat. And the feeder area will become very quiet this time of year, relatively speaking. Then later on, it may pick up as they start to bring their young to the feeder area.
Yeah, we've got lots of woodpeckers right now.
Yeah. Go ahead, Fred.
Yeah, I think in some of those years, I might have seen them later. I was also reading about one species of bird that said they would not feed, they'd only feed the babies the natural food and not so much the stuff at the feeders. Does that ring a bell at all?
Sounds accurate. Yeah. They have their preferences and needs.
Yeah, and the young birds, the nestlings, need a lot of protein in order to grow really strong,
right.
Whereas the adults can live more off of nectar and fruit and jelly and stuff like that. So they do tend to change the prey items when they're feeding young.
All right, Fred, thanks a lot for the call. Birds today with Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie, and to New Paltz now. And Marcia, you're on. Marcia.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good, welcome.
Okay, thank you. I have a question about barred owls. Last summer, we had a pair of barred owls, and they successfully made two babies that were adorable and would, like, sit on the tree and screech at us all the time. and then the parents seemed to go away while they were still fairly young, and then there were a pair around all winter, and we have a pair around this year who have successfully made another baby. And I was just wondering if there's any chance it's the same ones as last year, or if there's any way of knowing if it's the parents from last year or anything like that.
All right.
Well, I'm going to go with their parents are back. Mm-hmm. A strong, healthy adult pair will hold on to their territory and kick the kids out. However, if there's a vacancy for whatever reason, the young will move into that territory. So it could go either way. But the odds are it's the adults that held on to the successful territory.
All right.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Marcia. Appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Birds today on the program, voxpop@wamc.org is the email. This one is from Bill in Clifton Park. In the last 2 weeks, my wife and I have seen large flocks of Canada geese in the classic wedge formation flying at what looks like very high altitudes, migration type. Typically, you see these in the mid to late fall and then again early to mid spring, but I don't ever recall seeing such large numbers of them this close to the beginning of summer. I would think they'd be on the ground somewhere nesting and hatching broods. Any idea what's going on there?
Yeah, it's most likely either non-breeding individuals, which we do have some that hang around every year, or birds that they failed at nesting, and they don't try again. So they're probably just They don't have young, so they're moving around looking for other food sources.
Yeah, it's the annual bachelorette party out there.
Mm-hmm. So. All right. And one more email, and then we'll go back to the phones. This is from Ernie in Scotia. I was wondering what the top bird populations are currently for New York State, maybe top five.
Robins, starlings, song sparrow.
Yeah, a lot depends on where you are. Yeah. Urban environment, it will be a different mix than, let's say, agricultural environment versus deep woods or mountain environment. So those are top candidates. Henry Hill Collins in his book once said, and I believe it's true in Appalachia, the red-eyed vireo is the most abundant bird in the habitat there. These are the mountains mm-hmm. of southern tier down through Appalachia.
Fair enough. Mm-hmm. And let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551 to Chatham. And Jerry, you're on.
Hi there. So at an exciting afternoon the other day when a bluebird pair visited us and tried to get in a birdhouse that I've had in the same spot for many, many, many years, but they couldn't get in. So I quickly ran, and when they went away briefly and drilled out the hole a little bigger, and voila, the female then started going in and out and looked like had some success there. But I don't think I ever saw the male actually go in the birdhouse. And I was wondering, I have a whole bunch of questions, but one of them is, is maybe the hole not big enough because it's not the inch and a half I see online. Is the hole big enough for the male, or don't the males go in the house, or what's going on there?
Well, males have no I've seen males go in and out of the nest box many times, taking care of the young and what have you. It's the female that does the nest building. Inch and a half is a standard. It's always the rule, inch and a half a diameter nest hole.
Well, it's not that. So and I only saw the male once or twice today sitting on the house, and the activity seems to be, like, greatly reduced. So maybe because he can't get in the house, they're finding someplace else?
No,
or she's on the nest
already. Yeah, she's incubating the eggs.
Yeah.
And so he's just tending to, when there's a food call, he's on duty.
Well, there's not a nest in there yet. I mean, this was only a couple of days ago, and there hasn't been that much activity to build a nest, I don't think.
The other possibility is that since there is not a nest there, he's staked it out as what he thinks is a good nest site and is trying to attract a female to the territory that he's just set up there. And she may not be interested. She has better ideas. She's the one who makes the decisions. So.
Well, I was thinking of trying to enlarge the hole, although I'd have to disturb the house somewhat. I think that's a bad idea.
Yes, stick to an inch and a half. Don't go any larger, or you'll be inviting other birds.
Well, no, it's not. The hole isn't an inch and a half. I couldn't find my inch and a half drill bit.
Oh, well, then that'll do it. You got to be an inch and a half.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
All right, Jerry. Hey, thanks a lot. Appreciate the call, sir. This email, also about bluebirds. This is from Joe in Earlton. Twice this spring, we've had a small bluebird make its way down our chimney and into our wood stove's firebox.
Ouch.
I don't know for sure that it was the same bird, but it sure seemed to look identical. It hadn't happened in the prior 4 years that we've lived here. We live in the rural part of northern Greene County, and our house is set back fairly deep in the woods. One of our very attentive house cats noticed something was up and alerted us to the situation. I managed to safely remove it by wearing a glove and draping a rag over the bird so I could release it outside. It happened twice in a few short weeks. I have a friend who works for a fireplace and chimney company who strongly urged that I do not add a mesh wrap around the chimney cap, as that can be a fire hazard with creosote buildup and general pain to maintain. What other efforts could I employ to discourage this from recurring? And was this simply a spring nesting attempt? And that's from Joe.
You might ask your chimney friend about putting a cap on the top of the chimney. Many birds will investigate an opening that looks like a hollow tree to them. They can't tell the difference from a chimney or a tree. And then they get themselves in trouble. A cap might help prevent that. Okay. I know some ducks actually nest in chimneys, and it leads to all kinds of difficulties.
Ducks?
Ducks, yes.
Ducks, wow.
Yeah, mergansers. In a neighbor's house, we had mergansers nesting in their chimney, and all kinds of trouble with that.
That sounds cap, nuts.
It looks like a tree. They nest in a hollow tree. And so the cap was a preventive measure for that. But that also excludes chimney swifts, and we're kind of hurting for chimney swifts now because—
What's a chimney swift?
A chimney swift is a beautiful small bird that eats a lot of bugs, and they nest in chimneys. They used to nest traditionally in a hollow tree in the woods, few and far between. Once we started putting chimneys up, they found a wealth of vacancy opportunities, and they moved right in.
Interesting.
Now with caps on chimneys and also a decrease in the food supply of insects, they're having a tough time.
Okay, let's go back to our phone lines. Rich Guthrie is here, Julie Hart as well, and it's birds today. We'll go to Catskill. It looks like it's Ed's turn. Ed, you're on. Ed, you're on.
Hello, Ed.
Hello, Ed.
Hello, Ray.
Hello. Hi, everybody. Okay, goodbye, Ed. And let's see. We'll go to Saugerties. James, go ahead.
Hey, how y'all doing today?
Well, we're doing all right. How are you?
Good. I got a great story that leads into a question. So a number of years ago, I was fishing on the Ashokan Reservoir, floating about merrily, and two very large birds emerged from the canopy of the trees on the shore. Took me a while to figure out what was going on, but the first bird was an osprey. And the bird directly behind it was a bald eagle. The osprey had a rather large trout in its talons. And I watched these birds come out and do this this dance. It was like they were like fighter pilots over the open water. The bald eagle harassed the osprey to the point where it dropped the trout. And once the trout left the talons of the osprey, the bald eagle took about a half a second to swoop underneath it and catch the trout out of midair. And it flew in one direction, and the osprey flew in another direction.
Amazing.
It was quite an amazing thing to watch. The whole thing transpired about 20 feet above the water, right in front of my eyes. So that leads me to my question, which is that my understanding is due to this relationship and that, bald eagles are, I guess, kind of bullies, I've heard that ospreys will tend to leave areas where bald eagles are abundant. Now, here in, as y'all mentioned before, the eagles are doing great here, but I've seen a bunch of ospreys around lately. I've seen probably three in the last month. So are they hanging tight with the eagles? Can they coexist, or are the eagles going to bully them out of the area?
Well, I'll say that the story you heard is just not true. Ospreys coexist with eagles. They have to put up with the harassment. It's one of the reasons why Ben Franklin nominated the turkey as a national bird, because of that bad behavior by eagles.
Such bullies.
So, yeah, they get along. Ospreys have to deal with it, and they do.
Julie.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And they're both nesting all up and down the Hudson River, for example. They just won't be nesting like right next to each other.
Oh, they won't tolerate too close.
No, not too close, but they're still both there.
Yes.
Coexisting. Mm-hmm.
All right, James.
Gotcha. So they can coexist.
They do.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. Birds today, Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart, and we'll be back. The Marquise, Sit Still. That's the name of that one at WAMC. Vox Pop is the show. The lockbox is open. Feel free to make your pledge and shorten our fund drive. The fund drive begins Monday at 6 a.m. Everything we raise between now and then shortens that drive. It's WAMC.org. This email from Chris in South Amherst, Mass. Starlings is the subject heading. We seem to have a lot of starlings that have fledglings which insist on having mom fetch them suet and fly up into our black cherry tree to feed them while they squawk excitedly. The young ones are as big or bigger than the parent. Are they really so stupid they can't feed themselves? Or are they really cowbirds that the starlings are stuck raising? And that's from Chris.
Oh, that's such a great question. The starling babies are so loud and obnoxious, and they are like so annoying in my backyard right now as well. So I totally feel the pain there. they're actually starling babies, and I tend to call them just little balls of fat. They're really just stuffed full of suet. A lot of baby birds will end up being slightly bigger, or let's say heavier. They'll weigh more than the parents when the parents start to kick them away and make them feed on their own.
Yeah.
Gives them a little bit extra insurance policy if they aren't so good at finding their own food.
They take a little time. They're slow on the uptake.
Yeah, they've got a little reserve there. They're probably soon, if they're flying around into your yard, they'll soon be starting to try to feed themselves.
Now, you say they're loud, and our writer said they're loud. Rich, what do they sound like? I must have them in my backyard, too.
It's one of the most annoying sounds out there.
Oh, really?
It really is.
And they're incessant. They're constantly screaming and begging for more food. And unfortunately, it seems to work because...
Can you imitate it?
I'd rather not.
Oh, come on.
I have respect for our audience.
People should use the Merlin app to play it to themselves, and they can hear it and identify
okay.
it.
Okay. I mean, let me get this straight, Rich. We listened to an hour about copulating deep sea fish, and you can't make a sound like a starling.
Well, you see, that's over the limit.
Can we just play it like this?
Okay, go ahead. Yeah, sure, Julie Hart. Very technologically savvy of you. See if it takes the whole show to find it.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, no?
The pressure's on.
All right, here, I'll read this one while you're looking.
I got it.
Okay, let's hear it. Oh, yeah, we got those. Yeah, oh, for sure. I love that sound.
You love that sound.
Yeah, I like it.
Welcome to it.
It's okay a couple of times, but when it goes on all day long.
Three to four to five to six to eight.
Now that screech owl is another story. I'm not too... Fran and Mike write, we had a pair of bluebirds in our yard living in a regulation bluebird house we set up for them. We also set up a small feeding station. Several times a day we brought out mealworms, which they readily ate, and both brought back more worms to the box for the young. We fed them late afternoons one day, as usual, and the next morning they were gone, both parents, and we never saw the chicks. Box was totally empty. Years ago, when we had them, they'd usually stay all summer, and we don't understand why they were here for weeks and weeks, and now not one is still on our large property, and left so suddenly. Hope they're okay, but where are they? That's from Fran and Mike.
Well, many times when birds fledge, assuming they've successfully fledged, they will disperse, and many birds will just go fan out into the environment in search of food and safe shelter. And the other possibility, and I hate to think of it, is that there's something untoward happened to them, and perhaps a predator raided the nest during the course of the night and frightened off the parents.
Mm-hmm. All right, you ready for some real violence? Here we go. This is from Roger in Utica. Uh-huh. I once saw a fox with a crow half-swallowed head first, with a nearby group of crows mourning loudly from nearby trees. I believe crows eat other birds, eggs, and nestlings. In a slow drive-by, a crow was poking at a still-live baby rabbit about the size of a cigarette pack, but did not see the outcome of that. Is this a common prey or just opportunism?
Opportunity. Crows are that way. In fact, most birds are. I've seen robins going after a tiny snake on the road, a ringneck snake, which I jumped out. I'd rather have the snake around. for the moment. I mean, the robin can find itself an old worm or something, but yeah, birds will take whatever they think they can get when the opportunity is there.
All right, Julie?
Yeah, and crows are one of the biggest omnivores and generalists out there, so they will go after whatever they can find.
All right, this is from Pam, and then we'll go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. There are some bird names here that I'm sure I will mispronounce. Pam writes, I was driving and saw a bird swimming in a roadside swamp, and I immediately thought, hey, that's a grebe. But then its body sank below the water, and I could only see its neck and long pointed beak. I consulted my Peterson's guide when I got home, looked up grebe, but the anhinga is much more like what I saw than the pic of the grebe. Is it possible I saw an anhinga this far north? And that's from Pam.
Most likely not.
They have happened here in New York, but they are a Florida bird, maybe north to Georgia. And after that, forget about it. But interestingly enough, we had a rash of southern birds come north recently, including this year when the first flamingo actually turned up in New York State.
Crazy.
A few years ago, we had spoonbills, and a few years before that, the neotropical cormorant and anhingas. So depends on where you are and when it was. If you can put it on eBird, we'll be glad to have a second look at it, especially if you got a photo.
Yeah, and my guess is the more likely alternative would be a double-crested cormorant.
Aha, okay.
They look superficially similar at a distance, and they do tend to duck down, so they are only showing their head above the water. But they're, like, anhingas look like a snake, I feel like. Like, if you see just the head above the water, it looks very snake-like, whereas the cormorant is a little more bird-like.
Okay. You know what? I have to do this email as well, since we're on the subject of birds that shouldn't be around here, I guess. This is from Beth in Hurley, New York. Subject heading, parrot nesting. I was looking out a window over the weekend when I spotted a large orange bird in a tree, too big for a robin, an oriole, or a tanager, so I went for my binocs and got a better look. Turned out that the orange was the fluffy belly, the throat or neck, and the sides of the head. The top of the head was green. Glimpses of the back were green. The beak was that of a parrot. I couldn't identify the species, but it was something to add to my bird list. I'm sure this must be an escaped bird. But here are my questions. First, it looked as though there was a nest within about 2 or 3 feet of the parrot. Would a parrot take over another bird's nest? Would it build one as a place to roost? Or might it build one in the hope springs eternal mode of hoping to find a mate? Then is a parrot likely to survive our winters, or would it have any residual instincts to go south? And that's from Beth.
So where exactly is Hurley?
Down in Ulster County, New York.
Ulster, okay.
The answer is none of the above. That is that parrots, first of all, will not build a willy-nilly nest. I'm guessing that whatever that structure was something unrelated to the parrot itself. Mm-hmm. As parrots escape, they get away. People, unfortunately, for both of them, actually, parrots will get away and it'd be hard to find for the owners. And then we do have some parrots that have escaped, that have taken residence and have successfully inhabited New York State. The monk parakeet is fairly numerous downstate New York and Connecticut and lower Massachusetts and the like.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have a few that are out there, feral parakeets, the monk parakeet. But on the other hand, if you could get a picture of this one, that would be great. But Hurley, New York, I'm sure there's somebody down in Hurley that's missing a macaw or some Amazon parrot.
Okay. Let's see. Let's go to Bloomington, New York. And Sarah, you're up.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Howdy.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're on.
Okay, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to talk about indigo buntings. Did you already talk to somebody about that?
Not today. I mean, we've done it before, but go ahead.
Okay. So I have tons of them here. And I've also seen them where I work in Saugerties and where I work in Woodstock. And I know it's them because I hear them and then I see them. And one got stuck in my blueberry enclosure before I put a new door on it. And I actually caught it in my hand. God, what a gorgeous bird. My question is, have they always been this abundant and I just never noticed it before?
Well, I would say that bluebird, indigo buntings are not common, but they are out there. But they, as you say, they go very unnoticed. They're small. When they're up against a light sky, they look black. They don't. They look inconspicuous, just another small bird. But when you see them in the right light, they are, as you say, a gorgeous blue color. Mm-hmm. And their song is very distinctive. You'll know how many there are out there. That as you're driving the road with your window down, you'll hear indigo bunting one after the other on the backcountry yep. roads with yes. shrubbery.
I hear them all over the place.
So they.
But I mean, I sit outside and listen to the birds all the time, and I just don't. It's been 30 years since I saw an indigo bunting around here. I'm very happy to have them. And I have bluebirds too, but the buntings are so much bluer.
All right.
Yes. I just thought I would share that with you guys.
I think so indigo buntings are also very habitat dependent, and they really like this like shrubby edge type of habitat. So if there was, for example, a clear cut that happened nearby and it's now, let's say, 5, 10, 15 years after that clear cut, you would suddenly have a lot more buntings in the area.
Okay.
There's a couple of spots I know of in my neighborhood that if I go to there every year after year, there'll be an indigo bunting singing. They're very faithful to their territory. It happens to be a power line cut, which is what they like.
All right. Hey, Sarah, thanks a lot. Oh, go ahead.
The right of way has started to grow in. That must be it.
Thanks so much. Yeah.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to Ossining. And Steve, you're on.
Hey there. I'm calling because last year I saw a report put out by the American Bird Conservancy about neonicotinoid pesticides, and I learned that these pesticides were systemic in the plant. Every part of the plant kind of holds this pesticide for its lifetime, and it totally changed my perspective on feeding. So I'm wondering, you know, I've never seen any testing done on any commercial bird seed or anything like that. And I'm wondering, how is it possible that there's not trace amounts of this stuff in bird seed that so many of us are using? And is there any studies that you've come across or testing that that's been put out in recent years on it?
All right, Steve, thanks.
I haven't seen anything recently, but in the past, it's rather disturbing. First of all, while driving around in the West last summer, I saw fields, huge, large fields of sunflower plants for the purpose of harvesting the seed. And I've heard where they were using avicides out there to keep the blackbirds from eating the sunflower seeds or nipping at the buds. So I agree with you there, but I haven't seen anything. And perhaps, you know what, that's a little homework for me I'm going to have to go into because it's an ethical question that that you raise, and I think it's legitimate.
Julie.
Yeah, and, you know, it just kind of was really disheartening to think that I could be introducing trace amounts of poison to the birds when I think I'm helping them. So I've switched to organic now. Luckily, I've been able to find some. But, I just thought it would be something that people should know about because I had no idea, and I've been feeding birds for over 30 years.
Julie Hart.
I don't know of any studies either that have looked at bird food supplies and whether or not they're contaminated. But I do know that, you know, there are a number of studies that are starting to show up now that are documenting how the neonicotinoids are accumulating into the higher trophic levels in our system. So it is getting into the birds. So even though it may be there as a pesticide to kill the insects, the birds are eating those insects, and then the birds get those as well. And they have been documenting some detrimental effects. So they're not as healthy. They don't produce as many young and all that kind of stuff. So
interesting.
It is definitely an issue. I think I'm with Rich. I'll look and see if there's any papers on it in bird seed.
Meanwhile, native plant species.
Yes.
Flowers and fruit.
And Steve, we do this show once a month. So first Tuesday of the month, we will be back and maybe we'll have some answers for you on that. But thanks for calling. Let's go to Bob in Holyoke. Bob, you're on.
Thank you very much. I have a problem with too many varieties of blackbirds. You name a black bird, and I've got too many of them. Mm. They're really bullying all of the songbirds that I normally have here, and I didn't know if there was any way to reduce the numbers by maybe changing seed. I use black oil sunflower seeds, and I've got a suet feeder and a hummingbird feeder. So I didn't know if there was anything to discourage okay. all the variety of black birds.
Well, one possibility was to take a time out on the bird feeding. I'm surprised that the blackbirds are hanging around in any kind of numbers right now. Usually that happens during migration.
Yeah.
And they ought to be pairing off and going to the, except for birds like the grackles and the red-winged blackbirds that are gregarious and will nest in large groups. They may be feeding in your yard. So what I would do perhaps is change to either take a time out on the bird feeding or change the type of bird feeder to the small millet tubular bird feeders that they will have a harder time getting into.
What do you think, Julie?
Yeah, I also have problems with, as we mentioned, the starlings, but also grackles and red-winged blackbirds. Red-winged blackbirds aren't quite as aggressive, but grackles can be. I would also do one of those hanging tube feeders with that. That's like harder for them to fit onto and feed. And I would probably take the suet down for a little bit.
All right, Bob, thanks for the call. Julie Hart, tell us once again about how people can get involved with the Breeding Bird Atlas. Now, this is a peak time of year.
Right. So please visit our website, which is ebird.org/atlasny. You'll find all the information on there. You can also submit your observations there. You can find us also on all the different social media channels, and you can also email us. And that is nybba3@gmail.com.
nybba3@gmail.com.
Is that Roman numeral 3?
Roman numeral 3.
Aha. Yeah.
No, sorry.
It's the number 3?
It's the number 3.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Digit 3.
Okay, the
Arabic. Sorry. Yes.
And the other thing is you put out a wonderful tutorial recently.
I have
this last year of the Atlas project.
Yep. I've got tutorials on our YouTube channel, and we do every Wednesday evening. I do an open Q&A session for an hour. Anyone is welcome to join that as well. You can find information on that on our website, on our events calendar.
And if you're not from New York, Massachusetts, if you're from Massachusetts, Connecticut, Vermont, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, come into New York. Go to that website and find yourself a good priority block and hit it.
What's a priority block?
Those are the blocks that we selected where we really want people to go.
These are areas. These are geographic blocks.
Basically a 3x3 mile area.
Gotcha. Hey, Rich, I totally forgot to have your list of events that are coming up. So that's my bad. If there's any consolation, you have 12 seconds.
Atlas, go out, go to the Atlas site, find a block, and do it.
Fair enough.
Thank you.
Rich, if people want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
My name, Richard P. as in Peter Guthrie, all one, @gmail.com.
How do you spell Guthrie?
G as in George, U-T-H-R-I-E.
All right, last question as we roll the theme here in a second or two. This is from Catherine. No hummingbirds are coming to my hummingbird feeder, even when it's freshly made. Is it possible it gets too much sun?
No.
Well, it could. If it had too much sun, then it could get moldy really quickly. But most likely, there's just no birds there.
Right.
And then she says, also, is it possible that the actual feeder is not appealing to them? Are the flowers not painted?
No. Birds are just not there. They'll be there.
They're just not there, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you both very much for being here. And thanks to everybody who tuned in and chimed in on this program. We'll do it again the first Tuesday of next month. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart did a splendid job. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zach. It's Rob Chacon. What happened to Zach? Did he quit? Did he quit again? thanks to Ed Rosen, who screened the calls. Support comes from the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. At the Holiday Cottage Gift Shop, located in the historic Hotel Putnam Building, Main Street, Bennington, Vermont, featuring seasonal home decor, 802-430-3272 for store hours. Thanks to all of our underwriters. Thanks to everybody who chipped in the lockbox so far. You can still do that thing at WAMC.org. It's open 24/7. Please feel free. Everything we raise will count on day one of the fund drive, which, by the way, is Monday at 6. We'll see you tomorrow for Computers with Tony Yen.